Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People, a podcast about role-playing games and the weird, wonderful people behind them.
Hello, wonderful weirdos, this is Diogo Nogueira, and welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People. And today's guest is a very special guest. I'm talking about Linda Codega, who is a journalist, co-founder of Rascal News, which may be the first and only tabletop RPG news, you know, journalism that we have, and we have to celebrate and support. But before we get to talking to that a little bit, you know, deeper, I'd like to remind you to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show, just hit the subscribe button, share with your friends, share it with your gaming group, with your other collaborators on your project, and also leave us a review. Tell us what you think about the show, tell other people what you think about the show, and if you have any coins left from your left adventure, from your treasure, please support the show, pay us a coffee, help us keep this thing going, buy one of my games. I've recently released Fire and Fangs, which is a weird stone and sorcery, like prehistoric fantasy with dinosaurs, aliens, sci-fi things, ancient civilizations, adapted to old school essentials, so check that out. And let's get back to Linda Codega, then we talk about many great things, and there are some themes that go through the episode, which are something that anti-hierarchy, sorry, my English, you know, community, the importance of criticism, this punk attitude, you know, this punk culture. Talked about the exciting process of Rascal, how it's community-based, community-oriented, and how important it is for the community, for the tabletop RPG community to support it. We will have link on the show notes, so please check it out, see how we can support Rascal. We talk about very cool books, so talk about the 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons, which is this kind of academic book that talks about the game very deeply. This is a short episode, but it's really packet of really interesting conversations, very insightful. So listen up and let's get weird with Linda Codega. Hi, Linda Codega, welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People. It's great to see you again. How have you been?
Good, hanging in there, working really hard.
Yeah, big things happen. I remember talking to you when I was starting the show. I'm worried about it, episode 20 or something. Wanted to interview you and said, oh, just wait a minute, have big things coming. And then, you know, Rascal, a big reveal and very exciting. And so for the wonderful weirdos out there that maybe don't know who Linda Codega is, what is that you do, can you just share a little bit who you are in your own words? Like, I could read a bio, I know, but I love asking you, like, people who come here, who Linda Codega is, what is that you do, and if you can you share just a small weird detail about yourself, maybe the way you do coffee or any weird ritual you have?
Sure. So yeah, my name is Lynn, or Linda Codega. I'm a journalist, and I've been writing for like entertainment outlets for a long time, and recently I co-founded Rascal News with a couple other journalists, and we are focusing on tabletop role-playing games. And it's been an adventure. It's been really interesting to try and build something with these other two journalists where we are anti-hierarchical, and we're working towards, we are like worker-owned, we're reader-supported, we have no ads, we have no sponsorship or anything. It's just people like you and your listeners who have decided that they want to support journalists doing journalism in the space, and it's really wonderful. So that's what I'm doing. I'm a writer. And a fun fact about me, I'm a competitive sailor. I think that's always a fun fact, is that I've been sailing since I was a little kid, and you know, every summer I head out into the Hudson River and I just work the ropes, and I'm on the bow, and I'm playing with a spinnaker and giant sails, and I'm a competitive sailer.
Nice. I think it's a fun fact. Do you go into like championships and stuff like this? Have you no?
So I've done that stuff. I did that in college when I had time to do it, and sort of like a little bit after college, because I worked at a boatyard for a couple summers after college, because I was like, I can't get a real job. I was an English major. So I worked at a boatyard, and I did like a couple larger events there. And I've done deep water sailing and stuff like that. And I spent like a couple summers in the Caribbean as like a charter boat captain.
Nice.
But nowadays the competitive sailing is like up and down the Hudson River at a bunch of different places. And of course there are like qualifiers and like regattas that you have to like reach a certain number of entries in order to like attend. So as far as like competition goes, it's a pretty casual competition, but it's definitely we're a part of a league and we pay dues and we get like fun shirts and like engraved glasses at the end of the year. Like it's a whole thing.
That's awesome. And just a curiosity, like do you like playing like games with themes with, you know, sailors, naval adventurers and like pirates and stuff?
Totally. I'm trying to whip up a game of Rapscallion with a couple friends.
Oh yeah.
Rapscallion's the new game from Magpie Games. It's been in Ashcan for a while. It's powered by the apocalypse. But yeah, I always love pirate media, pirate games. I really loved Black Sails when it was out. I really loved Our Flag Means Death. And I'm writing like a pirate novel right now, which I'm really excited about.
Wow, that's very cool. Have you wrote more like fiction before? Have you?
Yes. So I've written like a bunch of short stories that have been published across various magazines. I sold my novel last year. It'll come out in January of 2025, which is very exciting. So in like 6 short months, my debut novel is coming out.
That's the one you're talking about? The pirate stuff? Oh, nice.
No, oh, sorry. This is a different one. This one's called Moth Eater, and it'll show up in stores in January of 2025. But yeah, I write a lot of fiction, and I mentioned up top I'm a journalist, and I've done like game writing, and I'm just a writer. Very nice. I think that the best way to describe me is like I sit at my little computer and I write all day.
Write. You spend all day writing. Do you have this discipline to sit down and wow, that's very nice.
It is.
Do you have I always ask here. Do you have like a creative ritual, something you do before start working to help get you into the mood or anything? Like, do you pour some coffee, listen to music, or anything like this? Like, put on like working shoes, like some people do. You know?
Yeah, I don't think I have a specific creative ritual. I'm definitely one of those people that pretty firmly believes that in order to be a writer, you just have to sit down and write. And I feel like it's a discipline. And I feel like while inspiration is nice, you can't wait for inspiration to write. You just sort of have to write anyway. But I do get coffee every morning. I walk my dog every morning at 3 p.m. I take a break and I walk my dog again. And I do fairly long walks in my neighborhood. So maybe not specifically creative rituals, but definitely like rituals in my life to sort of like make sure that I keep things focused. Oh, I really like flowers, which I think is a very, very silly thing, but everyone probably says. So I try to always keep like fresh flowers on my desk.
That's amazing. I mean,
so it makes me feel nice.
Yeah. Even though you don't have a ritual, but I mean, the walking is very important because it's movement. Your body's moving. You're seeing things. You're seeing new things. You have contact with other people. You see the sky and the flowers by your side. You always have, you know, access to beauty right next to you. So, you know, those are very mindful things that helps, I think.
I think so too. I think calling it a sort of mindfulness of how I move within my like, you know, day-to-day life and like mindfulness within my office. Like my office is covered in artwork. You can't see it. You can only see like this background, which I've put up for Zoom calls like this. Sorry, this is an audio medium, but I have like a nice flower background, but I have like a ton of art up here to my left. That's just like fan art, stuff I've collected from conventions. I have a wall of Polaroids here that are like me and my friends and our adventures. And then I have like a wall over here to my right that's just that's mostly fine art and art prints. And this is also where my games are. So once we're off audio, once we're off recording, I'll turn my computer around so you can see my room.
Yeah,
definitely creating an intentional space.
Yeah, for sure. I love this book that's called See Like an Artist. And he talks about this, like hanging pictures of the artists, the admirers, the writers, or having the books. And it's like these people are pushing him forward to do his art. And he's inspired by the stuff he's surrounded by. And I kind of try to do with this. It's like too many books and games here. And it's the ops I have here.
Totally get it.
Yeah. Lynn, the podcast is called Weird Games and Weirder People, and we like to have this kind of positive spin in the weird. It's like the weird is the new wonderful. And I always love asking the guests here if they identify themselves with the weird, and if they want to maybe try to define what is weird for them, and if they seek the weird in their work and in their life in general.
Definitely. I think that weird in a lot of ways means going against the norm, thinking for yourself, being deeply invested in what you are doing, but also in what other people are doing. I think that being weird is being in a state where you question a lot of things, right? You question, like, why am I doing this? Why is this person doing this? Why am I writing like this? Why am I choosing this word? Why am I pursuing this story?
Curiosity too, right? It's like a
yes.
Curiosity, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that weirdness and curiosity are like really tied together in a lot of ways. I think that like so many weird games are very curious. I think weird art in general is really important. And I think maintaining that kind of like curiosity is really key to being a weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see yourself as a weirdo?
I don't know, because like I think in a lot of ways I feel so many people are so unique and so individual. It's hard for me to be like, yes, I am a weirdo, because it feels like I would be putting myself in like this class where I'm like, I'm better than other people, which is like, oh god, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but do other people see yourself as weird?
Yeah. Like, I definitely think that I am the kind of
person. Have you been called weird by others? Like,
oh,
you're weird
yeah.
or stuff.
Yes, yeah. I have been called weird. And I'm just like, okie dokie, sounds good.
Yeah.
Thanks for playing. See ya. So yeah, I think that like there's a lot about me that a lot of people would consider weird just in general. But yeah, I think that might answer your question.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for example, if you would meet people from high school and explain the work that you do with games and stuff, would they say like, well, that's weird? Like Rascal, for example, this enterprise of being, you know, supported by readers and really focused on wouldn't people say, yeah, that's like a weird choice that you made, probably?
Yes,
right?
I don't think that they would say it to my face. But I absolutely think that behind my back, they would be like, that's a little weird, right? Like, what they're doing is, like, a little, right? And they'd be like, yeah, weird. I'll be like, okay, weird.
Yeah, well, that's like, yeah, I love the weird. Like, I say weird, I'll say, yeah, that's, yeah, obviously, that's what I'm aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Yeah. And do you, talking about role-playing games, since it's now like what you're focused on in your work as a journalist, and it's a very analytical work that you do, would you consider role-playing games a weird medium? Are they weird by themselves? And what would be your favorite part of this medium?
Yeah, so I'm very much of the opinion that critiquing art and engaging with art at any level requires practice and skill and, you know, investment and curiosity. And I think that role-playing games are in this very interesting position where they are like weird and unique because they have this like additional generative element to them in a way that not a lot of other art has. All art has like impressive elements, right? Where it's like you come away from a piece of art with an impression and your impression mm-hmm. is unique. But I feel very firmly, and I know that like people will fight me about this because I've gotten into like cute little DM threads with people who are like, who don't agree with me, which is totally fine. Art yeah. is weird, all good. But I do firmly believe that the creative generation at the heart of tabletop role-playing games makes them a very weird medium, especially when we compare it to something like a film where you go in and you sit and you watch someone else's vision. And you can take that, you can take impressions away from it, you can take interpretations away from it, but you can't really generatively add to the story in a way that is collaborative and works with mm-hmm. the director or with the writers. And yes. with role-playing games, you can, and you're encouraged to, and like you should, and that's
how, a default setting, right? Mm-hmm. That's a default.
It's how they're built. So yeah. I think that, yes, I think that reviewing and critiquing role-playing games is weird because you have to think about that extra element. And I think that when you critique any piece of art, you have to think, there's like uniqueness to critiquing any piece of art, right? So I think that while with tabletop role-playing games, that like unique element is that generative creative interaction, there's obviously different interesting and weird elements whenever you critique any other piece of art. But yeah, role-playing games, I think, because they do have like this really unique facet to them, are weird.
Yeah. And then what would be your favorite part of the RPG? Is this generative element?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's always my favorite part. I think that's always my favorite part when you get at the table and you start like riffing with your friends and having a good time with your friends. I am also of the opinion that like if you are good at tabletop role-playing games and good at like being at the table, not necessarily like you're the most creative person in the world, but like you're good at being at a table with people, you can make any game fun.
Yeah. It's like a conversation. Like we're also reacting and creating stuff. It's just, I know some people like who play board games, friends who don't play RPGs, but I sometimes try to push one of those more narrative board games like Dixit or like Hobbit Tales. And like, oh yeah. no, this is too much for me. This is, oh, it's not, let's try. And it's hard to convince people that it's not that. You don't have to be any kind of, you know, creative genius to play stuff. You just, there's really cues and stuff. And mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's just, you're right. Like, the idea that, like, being at the table, being receptive, like, understanding what yeah. other people are saying, the cues on the cards, the cues from other people. I think learning that and learning how to be appreciative of that part of the process is really important.
Yeah. You've wrote about other entertainments, about games like video games too. Do you think other kind of games have this the potential to have this generative element too?
It's really hard to say. Video games definitely come the closest, but they are still very set, right? Like the code is the code. And I feel like no matter what, there's always the story that has already been set out for you, no matter how you get there. Yeah. And I think
you can use those elements they have, and you can still put monster here and there and create another story, like even mm-hmm. mods, but it's only with the pieces that comes in the box, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that right now, even with interactive elements, it is really hard to see a game. Oh my gosh, there's something weird going on outside. One sec.
Okay.
Can we pause for a second?
Yeah.
Sorry. Other pieces of art with interactive elements.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think while there are other pieces of art with interactive elements, I feel like the generative, creative ask that is at like the core of tabletop role-playing games, it's not something that I've seen replicated anywhere else. And it's not something that I think will be easily replicated in video games.
Yeah. And also they are so easy to hack, right? Not only you create to make stuff for the game, it's so easy for you to create your own game based on something you played and modify it. And
totally. And I think, you know, when you play a game, you're creating the game because no one has every single rule memorized of every single game. Like even the designers that design the games go in and are just like, you know, I found this rule doesn't work for me, so we're just going to ignore it. And I'm just like, you wrote this book. What are you doing?
It was years ago, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, in addition to being creative and being, like, encouraging people to make their own games outside of the game they're playing, I think when people, like, play games, they become game designers, which is really cool.
Yeah. I always had this, like, everyone that plays the games has a little bit of game design, and especially, you know, games with GMs, they have to solve problems and then create solutions in the game. And it's just a small step to go a little bit further, I guess.
Totally.
Yeah. I always ask people here about maybe sources of inspiration for your work. Mm-hmm. I mean, as creators, you are always, you know, drawing inspiration from everywhere, every experience we have, things we read. But at least for me, I have this part of my life that I draw a lot from, like stuff that I consumed in my childhood, the culture that was, inspired, engulfed one, you know, immersed on. And I'd like to ask you if you do have any, you know, period of life or any area of culture that you draw a lot to, or that you draw from when you explore your work.
Totally. I think the first thing is that, like, I grew up Southern in Virginia, and Southern culture is something that I find a lot of inspiration in and something that I really like as far as drawing like stories and stuff. Like, my folks live out in North Carolina on like an island in the middle of kind of in like a middle of like a touristy area, and I'm just like, you know, climate change is happening, global warming is real, and they're like, we're not here forever, don't worry about it. I'm like, okay, well, you live on an island in the middle of nowhere, but sure. But like, that area of the world is very beautiful to me, and like, I draw a lot of inspiration from that. I go on long hikes, and I love the mountains so much. So that's a huge source of inspiration for me. I am really an avid reader. So I'm constantly reading new books and getting new ideas and like consuming the ideas of people who are like thinking very hard right now, which I find personally much more satisfying and generative than going back to the things, the like stuff that I enjoyed in my childhood. And I think that that's mostly because like I was really into Harry Potter as a kid. And when J.K. Rowling kind of came out as like a pretty horrible person, I think like starting like 8 years ago, even, I really reevaluated how I held on to media just in general, not only like her work in Harry Potter, but what the media of the past kind of like meant to me personally. And that's when I sort of started really reevaluating how I value art and how I read and how I watch things and like what I read and watch. So that was a really interesting turning point in my life where I'm like, okay, I need to think like people are thinking now, not how I thought they were thinking when I was a kid.
Oh, so yeah, that, for sure.
That's always been fun for me. Is figuring that out.
I totally know the way things work. I'm not seeking inspiration from that part. Mm-hmm. You know, and making, if I'm making a sword and sorcery game, I will not draw inspiration from, you know, the social atrocities that Robert E. Howard would write. But there are sword and sorcery writers that didn't have stuff like this, you know, that were more inclusive. And Fritz Leiber had very, you know, active and powerful women characters and stuff. Like, there is elements on these medias that goes beyond the social culture of that time that I, you know, completely mm-hmm. reject and, you know,
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I think another thing that I draw a lot of inspiration from is also as someone who's like, I only read things that like modern, I also like collect 70s punk rock records.
Mm.
And that's for some reason, like 70s punk rock is like very inspirational to me. And I'm just like, I only need to listen to The Clash and Dead Boys and Stiff Little Fingers for the rest of my life, like nothing else. So I find those.
I'm a bit like this with the Ramones for me. It's mm-hmm. like
Ramones are very good. Yeah, Stooges, like anything from that era, I'm just all about. So I find that very inspirational and very fascinating. And I like have a ton of playlists that are just like different punk rock records, which is very fun for me personally. But yeah, definitely that kind of ethos of fighting against oppression, fighting against the man, like questioning the government, all of that, and questioning, like just questioning things in general, is very intrinsic to my creative process in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here in South America, we have a bunch of this rebellion against authority, too, and you know, the power that comes from the north and stuff. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, reading interesting books constantly, and I wanted to ask you if you had any great books you read recently that you would like to recommend and talk a little bit about them.
Yeah, so one of the books that I read recently was The Spear Cuts Through Water, which has been on my list for a long time, and I just finished reading it, and it's just this incredible fantasy novel, but it's beautiful, the prose is wonderful, so I would highly recommend that one. I'm in the middle of reading a book called Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind, which is about, like I said, I'm about halfway through. It's about a young man who has a lot of debt and takes a job as like a dream cleaner for the middle class. And basically he's employed by this company that is employed by other companies, and he goes into people's dreams and he cleans them up so they can be more productive workers.
Hmm.
It's very funny and very dystopian and very weird. Yeah. I'm currently reading through 50 Years of Dungeons and Dragons, which is a series of essays about Dungeons and Dragons, has people from all over kind of the academic sphere wrote for this. People like John Peterson, Evan Tormer. Who else would we know? Daniel Heath Justice, Helen Wee. So just like a bunch of people who are thinking very hard and seriously about Dungeons and Dragons, which I always appreciate. So I'm reading through that. I've read about half of the essays, I think. So
what did you think?
Oh, I like it a lot. I think it's very much, it's very much aligned with the way that I think about Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games. My favorite one so far has been Evan Torner's essay on combat in Dungeons and Dragons. It's So good. And I actually like emailed MIT Press and I was like, I would love to have an excerpt of this chapter for Rascal. And they were like, you can have the whole chapter. Do you want a second chapter? And I'm like, yes. So now we're getting like two chapters to put on Rascal, which I'm really excited about. Nice. But yeah. So Evan Torner's chapter on Dungeons and Dragons and combat, I just really enjoyed. So that'll be on Rascal. But there was like Kellen Wee's chapter in here is about Singaporean play culture, and it is fascinating. Wow. But yeah, that one's also very, very good. So yeah, there's a lot in here that I'm very much enjoying. Yeah. And is sort of, you know, sharpening my sword. I think that in order to be a good, kind of like what you said, right? You need inspiration in order to be a good writer. I think you need to read good criticism. Yeah. In order to be a good critic, like, you For sure. have to do it.
Yeah. You have to be interested to be interesting. It's like a phrase I love too. Like, that book, Sion Card Artist said, like, they have like writing classes that were always that student, like, oh, I love writing, but I hate reading. And like everyone knew that you could write that one off, that one wouldn't be like a writer because, yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's so important to, you know, sharpen the sword, read what other people are thinking, and sort of push your own thought process along those lines and see if you can figure out how they got to those conclusions and how your own ideas might contrast or even like support what they're talking about. Yeah, I really love reading criticism. I have like one of Pauline Kael is a fairly well-known movie critic from like the 70s and 80s. And I have like a book of Pauline Kael's criticisms, like the movies that she reviewed and like the criticisms that she critiqued, because she wrote about, there was one great essay in there that is her responding to someone else's criticism. And she's just like, I think you're wrong. Here's 3,000 words why. And I'm just like, it's incredible. So wow, Pauline Kael's great. Obviously, a lot of other like cultural critics, Reel to Reel by Bell Hooks, also an incredible piece of criticism that I reference just in my writing life. But yeah, I love reading criticism. I think it's really fun. I'm also a professional hater, so I love that too.
Oh wow. One thing I asked you is about maybe if you have a specific artist or a couple of artists or writers, whatever the field is, could be a writer, could be a painter, could be a musician, someone that inspires you in the way they approach their work, and you try to model the way, you know, maybe you studied the way they do the work, and you try to model it even in the craft or the way they portray themselves or talk about the craft. Do you have anything like this?
I think that my best answer to this kind of thing, especially with regards to journalism specifically, is that I am very inspired by not only my colleagues at Rascal, but all of the people out there who are writing criticism in this space. You know, Charlie Hall at Polygon, Christian Hoffer at Comic Book News, all the people at Bell Lost Souls, people just kind of, you know, Morris at N World. There's so many people out there that are like really dedicating themselves to this work, and I find that very inspiring.
Awesome. Yeah. Amazing. And have you ever felt like you learned something by like reading their work or something like this that you incorporated in your craft?
I'm not sure if I can point to anything specifically, but I think just the fact that I don't know if there's anything specifically, but there's always, you know, there's always like, you can learn so much from talking to people, you know, like this, like what we're doing right now, and
from
people professionally. And I think just moving forward throughout my work as a critic and as a journalist and a writer, I think just like listening to people and trying to take away something different from every conversation is really what helps me grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great. In your work in Rascal, the stuff that you're doing right now, what did you say is the weirdest part of working in Rascal?
The weirdest part is that I have to do everything. People trust me to do everything. I think that's weird. Like my co-bosses trust me to like take care of the money part. And I'm like, are you sure? They're just like, you got it. I'm like, oh God, they trust me. So yeah, I think it's just the idea that like the weirdest thing is realizing that like the three of us are doing everything, which is just wild. It's so weird. I'm like, I never thought I would want to do this, but I am thriving. It's just incredible.
Oh wow, that's great that you're enjoying. Like the pressure can be scary sometimes, and you know, but
it's terrifying. Yeah. It's absolutely terrifying.
But it's meaningful to you. It's so meaningful that you know it's you're able to you know cope with right? Do you have any exercise like to cope with pressure? I know you walk with the dog. You love hiking. You love forest. So you know you have art all around you. So all these things you know help with stress, I would guess. But I mean, doing all of this, do you have anything that you do to try to relax and to, you know, relieve some of the tension from your work?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that is really important at Rascal is that the three of us, Chase, Carter, Rowan, Zioli, and I, are very much in it together in a very, very real way, where we talk about everything, we discuss everything, we have a lot of meetings, and we are working together in a way that feels really important and really good. And also feels like there is a lot of pressure, but it's all pressure that like we are putting on ourselves. And so talking that out definitely helps, because we feel like everyone else is doing a good job. So if all three of us are like, if like, you know, me and Chase are like, Rowan, you're doing a good job. And Rowan and Chase are like, Linda, you're doing a good job. And Rowan and I are like, Chase, you're doing a good job. Like it feels pretty good. It feels like we're doing better.
That's awesome.
than we might have at like another position. But yeah, walking in the woods, a big one for me, big stress reliever. Yeah. Walking
so
in the
you,
woods.
Do you live near woods? Do you live near?
I do. I live. Yeah. I think I live like, if I was walking, I live like 10 minutes away from a mountain.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I walk out and as like in my daily walks with my dog, I like walk along a mountain more or less. But yeah, so there's like a lot of local parks and local trails down and in the woods. I live really close to the Appalachian Trail, and yeah, there's just a lot of places I could go and just be like, I need to look at a tree. Like, for the love of God, I need to touch grass. Like,
yes, yes. It's so good. It's so good. I wish I could do more of this here, you know, maybe in a big city. Sometimes it's not that easy.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But we do have trees here. Like I went to Gary. Sorry. Well, of course I have trees. Like I went to Gary Cohn and saw all this, you know, really pine trees, you know, very, you know, dry from, you know, Wisconsin and, you know, all covered in snow. And for us, like, oh, this is very pretty because it's very different from where I live. But I also spent 10 days seeing this kind of, and coming back and seeing our trees here that are all with vines, and there is like plants growing on the trunks everywhere, and it's very green and seems very alive, and it's very, very beautiful too. And I'm like, sometimes we forgot of the beauty that is riding in front of us. And yeah,
for sure.
I try to enjoy this. It's not a forest, but we have like this very luscious trees in the streets, you know. It's like a tropical streets. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. We just have a mountain.
Yeah. Linda, what would you say would be your strength or some kind of adventure that you bring to your craft that you think that helps you do your work?
Oof.
Do you think you have anything that's, you know?
I don't know. I think that, like, I am very, I try to be very practical. I try to be very...
You're disciplined to work every day and sit down. Yeah.
I think that that's what I would say is, like, my discipline, I think, is a huge strength in the fact that, like, I make a plan and I stick to it, and then I can, like, make those plans, and then I can, like, find out what I need to know in order to make those plans. But yeah, I think just the discipline, the stick-to-itiveness, that sort of, like, I'm going to sit down and work.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. That's excellent. I have to remember this more. I want to tattoo in my arm with a phrase that I love. That's put your ass where your heart wants to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. You want to write, sit down and write. And sometimes it's...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are like, oh yeah, I'd love to write a novel one day, or like, I want to write a novel, or like, yeah, like, I've started, and I think I have this idea for a story, and I'm so frequently, it's just like, well, everyone has ideas.
Yeah.
You need the discipline to actually execute them.
Yeah.
So I think that that's maybe not something special, but I think that that's something that I definitely have going for me, is that I will simply do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you very good at finishing stuff? Yeah. Like, make plans and make it work. Yeah. Cause sometimes I love this graphic about, you know, the life of a project that starts really good and goes down, and sometimes in the middle, like, oh, this is terrible, I'm never going to finish. But you stick to it and you finish. Like, it's not so good as you imagine, but, you know, you learned something. But I think there's a lot of people that gets to this point and despair and just do something else. Or sometimes they're just distracted and start another project and another project and another project and doesn't finish. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have finished stuff like this, or do you always finish your stuff?
Oh, I have plenty of unfinished projects. I'm no hero. Like, I'm not special. I have a whole graveyard of dead projects. But I think that a lot of the times I see those dead projects as practice. I see those dead projects as like, okay, well, like, I got this far, but you know what? Like, I don't think it's I don't think that the finished product will actually be something I want to move forward with, like, professionally or creatively. So I'm going to try something different. But yeah, when I think that, like, when you get to something that is really worth the time, it's just about putting, like, doing it every single day, or making plans to do it every single day, or like, and sticking to those plans. I think that there's so much about, you know, practicing for the projects that matter, that's also really important.
Yeah, that's a great vision to not see your unfinished stuff as something you failed, but just something that you use as a practice to make your work now. And that's, thank you for this vision too, by the way. That's a great relief, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, there is also this stuff you left behind, and sometimes you're looking for inspiration and you find something old, and you maybe not finish that, but maybe that inspires you something new, and you revive that in some way. I was working in a game in 2022, left behind, I went to Gerrycon, played a different game, and that inspired me, and a new mechanic kind of revived this game of years ago, and now I'm almost finishing writing the playtest, and I'm very excited about it. Yeah.
Congrats.
I love this, like, recovering, like, resurrecting the dead, you know, it's something special, I don't know.
And sometimes projects just take a long time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that happens. I started designing a game in early 2019, but it was about like the Black Plague in Venice. And then COVID happened and I was like, I'm putting this away. Like, this is not, like, I can't do this right now. But that's one of those where I'm just like, but it was really good practice, and maybe I'll go back to it one day. But yeah, I think that like just keeping track of all of those projects and keeping track of all of the times that you wanted to finish something is also important. Finishing something is the most important. Like finishing something is the most important.
Yeah, but
like,
yeah.
Nothing like nothing that you do creatively
nothing
is ever
is wasted.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Perfect. And are you developing any game right now?
I am.
Yes. Would you want to talk about it, or is this top secret right now?
Right now, I can talk about it when we're not recording.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
For now.
Wow,
this,
I'm so excited. So at least we have a secret coming. Like there's a secret game.
Yes.
So are you? Right... Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you working with more people? It's just all your game.
This one, I will be the sole writer of it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. And what did you say? Do you think you have anything you struggle with? Something you sometimes have a difficulty with and you would like to maybe work on or get better with in your work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I can get better with every part of my work. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, we
I'm
all
like,
can.
Totally. And I'm like, you know, I could be a little bit more disciplined with my time. I think that I could be...
More?
I mean, like, you know, I think like breaking it down and being really clear about like, okay, well, you know, I need to do these three things and I should do like at least one a day and like making sure that I do it. What else can I work on? I think I could always be a better writer. You know, I always think I could be a better critic. I could be more informed. I could be more aware of the history. I could be better read. I think that there's always... I think that like I feel very much that my writing and everything I do is always a work in progress, simply because I think if I ever thought that I was good enough to stop working hard, I don't know if I'd want to live like that.
I think
I always want to think that I could be better than I am.
Yeah, we all can. I mean, not only in that, right? In everything, we can always learn. Like every day, like if we get 1% better, it's amazing. And do you have any practice of studying? Do you like to read books about writing, or more about, you know, as you said, studying the work of others and analyzing their work, or
studying the work of others? I think at this point, unless I was going to study something very specific, I don't necessarily think that classes are going to help me unless I was doing some sort of like graduate level program. So I think for now, and for me specifically, I think reading the work of other people is the best way to learn. I think that like there are so many smart people doing so many smart things. And I think that's how I see myself improving. Like the 50 years of Dungeons & Dragons book. Like this is relatively heavy academic, text, and it's one of those things where like I need to pay attention to it.
Yeah,
so I think that having that and having the desire to be challenged in the stuff that you take in is the best way to improve the stuff that you put out.
Yeah, it's what you feed yourself, it's what you produce. Like it's this is like I would say, there's this saying like your income is the average of the income of your fifth closest people, but like your output is like the artistics, like would be average of your five closest inspirations or something. So you have to keep close the stuff that you think it's great and you study them and you feed yourself them and maybe you learn from it. And there is this saying that as an artist, when you're beginning, your taste is great, right? But you can't get there yet, but you're like working to get to where your taste is, right?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that where like your taste is like up here and you're down here and you just like have to constantly like work to get to where your taste is, and then your taste comes a little better, and like not necessarily because like you're interested in quote unquote better art, but because you understand what makes good art now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know what you're looking at.
Yeah, yeah. And even the stuff that you like it before, you manage to admire it even further because you know how it's so well thought out, so well constructed, and how it works. It's mm-hmm. amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you say would be, maybe if you can remember, the weirdest game you ever played, or if that's too much, like a weird game you played recently that's made an impression on you, or how what a game could do or be.
A weird
and it
game.
Can be role-playing games, can be video games, can be board games, anything.
Yeah. I think that I'm going to go with the role-playing game Hell Whalers.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like you are doomed Christian whalers on a sea, and there's just like it's very weird and strange and very satisfying to play, and it just hits on a lot of the things that I really like, which is like weird Christian imagery, sailing, and like natural forces sort of beyond your control. There's just a lot there that I'm like, it's weird and I love it.
Yeah, and the art is beautiful too. The colors, yeah. Yeah, it's on Kickstarter right now too.
Oh,
I don't know. Right? Isn't it? Cool. No, it's on itch, right? It's on itch, or it's on Kickstarter.
It might
it's
be Kickstarting. Recently. It yeah. might be Kickstarting. I got like I think I got a copy at PAX Unplugged or something. But yeah, big fan.
Nice. Yeah. I'll put links on show notes. I know the episode that aired today that they were recording is with Cassie Moffwin, and she talks about Hell Whalers too when I put the links on the show notes too. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And Lynn, do you have we have the other hobbies. Would you say is like the sailing thing, or do you have any other maybe creative hobbies that you do just for yourself instead of, you know, take it as a work or no?
Oh man. Sailing, I think hiking and like going outside is like the big hobby.
You do so much, yeah.
Yeah, I think that sort of thing is like the big hobby that I do, that I'm like, this is just for me. I'm not competitive. I just do it for myself. Like, nobody knows where I go. I text a friend that I'm going to disappear into the woods, and if I'm not back in 12 hours, send a search party. But that's kind of it, right? I stay pretty busy. But yeah, I think creatively, at least, going outside and being away from everything, I find very generative and very, very fun. And I think that's the big hobby that I have that's creative and not for anyone else, which I think is hilarious. Like, my big hobby to be creative is to like disappear into the woods where no one talks to me and I don't see anyone else.
but that lets your mind works in the background, and then you start having ideas. Like, do you carry a notebook or anything with you when you're hiking to take notes of the things?
Yeah, I do carry a notebook. I carry a notebook, and I also have right here, actually, I have my little voice note recorder. Like every journalist, you know, I have a little voice recorder.
Yeah.
So I carry one of these.
Very handy,
Yeah, and every now and then I dictate to it, which I find just like easier than a phone, especially if like my phone is one of those, if I'm using my phone as kind of like an emergency thing and I don't want to have notifications or like be tempted to like go onto any of the apps.
Very distracting, yeah.
Right. So just keeping one of these like manual voice recorders is really helpful.
That's perfect, because I see sometimes grabbing my phone to take a note and something pops up and then I see it and I forget what the note
was
going to be. It's terrible. So yeah, that's an excellent. I should get one too someday. I send voice messages to myself on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And that's
whatever works.
Yeah. Now we're almost like in 50 minutes, 1 hour of interview. And now I'd like to ask more about, you know, weird experience you might have in your life or maybe some of your beliefs. And now we start asking, are you a religious person? Do you see yourself as spiritual, or do you follow any kind of philosophy that maybe helps you navigate life or you know, the difficulties of day to day?
So I don't consider myself religious, and I don't even consider myself very spiritual. But I do really appreciate folklore, and I really appreciate the stories that people have told over and over and over again. So I think storytelling is something that is about as close to a spirituality as I can get. And I think that, in addition, a lot of the beliefs around how to build community, how to create communities, how to support communities is something that I care a lot about. I mentioned earlier that like I really like punk music, and I think like being a punk is something that I am very interested in. I do a lot of social justice work in my local town. I'm involved in anti-carceral work and abolition work. And that sort of thing is also very important to me. And I don't necessarily think of it as sort of like a spirituality or a spiritual calling, but I definitely think of it as kind of a moral structure around which I have built a lot of my life.
It is a philosophy of life in a way, right? To build community and integration and you know, being around people and helping people, and we're stronger together and, you know, happier together too, right? When we have connections and stuff.
So I think a lot about building community and what that means and how it works and how we do it and how to do it in a way that is authentic and useful to the people that are in that community. I think a lot about that.
Awesome. And where would you say you started thinking about this, or you learned how to do this, or have you always like been like this? Like you have examples for your caretakers, or how did you arrive at this?
Yeah. So I grew up, I moved a lot as a little kid, so I never really got a chance to learn how to build a lasting community for myself. And I didn't really have very good examples growing up because like my family, we were able to find friends and build like micro communities in a lot of places where we went, but it was never really established. So once I kind of settled on my own, that's when I first started really wanting to figure out how to build communities, how to be in communities. When I came out as queer about a decade ago, that's when I was like, okay, what is it about? Like, I don't want to just like have this as sort of like an interior feeling. I want to understand what a community means as far as like my identity and my relationship to that part of myself. So I think coming out had a really big impact on finding how I found community, how I created community, and how I helped build communities. And I think it really came out of that in a big way.
Awesome. Great. And then have you learned, how did you learn about the construction and how to build it? Have you had help from other people? Have you found a community and learned it from people that are already doing it, or
Was it? I mean, I think for me and for a lot of people, the only way to like build community is to be a part of the community and to like be really like committed to understanding what it takes to build that community together. Just like a lot of learning from other people, a lot of going to meetings, a lot of like going to town halls and city centers and keeping up with my local newspaper and writing letters and going to advocacy meetings and like going to protests and like just all of the stuff that kind of like adds up slowly as you build a community and you like create connections and friendships and establish working groups within your own areas, within your neighborhoods and your towns and your friend groups. It's just that kind of constant iteration of commitment to each other and how you express that.
Awesome. That's great. And do you think the time you didn't have that integrity with the community and the time you have now, do you think you feel more, you know, less stressed, more, you know, happy and integrated? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that if I did not have the kind of community and friendships and sense of belonging that I have now, my life would be, I don't want to say horrible, but my life would not be as good as it is now. You know, like now I have such a huge, wonderful community of people who not only care about me, but like want to build something with me. And I think that that's probably one of the things that I'm like proudest of.
Yeah,
it's just the fact that like great. there are people in my community who want to build with me. And that's really
amazing.
Yeah, really. It is really amazing. Yeah.
Part of something bigger, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Other thing I like to ask is, you know, have you ever had any experience, weird experience, something like out of body experiences or any kind of near death experiences or a trance of any kind, like deep meditation or hypnosis? And how, if you did, how did that affected you in any way or no?
Yeah, I think that I've had some weird experiences out in nature before. Definitely a couple experiences in the mountains that I am just like not comfortable talking about because they're just too weird. But there's been like a lot of experiences on the ocean that are just like so weird. Like I've seen St. Elmo's fire. I've seen really, really big sharks. Really big sharks. Like sharks that I'm just like, oh, I didn't see that. Like I cannot think about how like the animal following my boat right now. Wow. Like I have to keep going. I've had encounters with lots of marine life that are just like so weird and definitely with
marine life is fascinating, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I've had encounters with dolphins and whales and sharks and stingrays and stuff like that. I was once placing an anchor. I was like, we were anchored in this like really, really shallow bay. And we were anchored at two points from the bow and the stern. And this bay has a lot of sharks in it. And because it was so shallow, it was really, really muddy. And we can't tell if the boat was correctly attached to, if the anchors had like bit into the sand. So basically we had to, I had to go into the water and like make sure that the anchor was properly caught in the bottom of the bay. And I ran into a couple sharks. So that was fun. I think that they were lemon sharks. They were like really, really passive, very much like they just go along the bottom of the ocean. They like suck things up so that they don't really attack typically.
Yeah.
So I literally just pushed it away. I was like just trying to do my job.
Has anything ever happened with someone when you were on a boat with sharks?
Yes.
Or anything?
Not with sharks. Again, sharks they don't show up very often, honestly.
Yeah.
But there was this one time where a kid jumped onto a jellyfish and went into like anaphylactic shock. And he's okay. He's totally fine. But we had to like pull him out, give him CPR. We had to call the Coast Guard, but the Coast Guard would take too long to get there. So like I was making sure, like, I was in the lifeboat as we, like, went to the nearest port where they had an ambulance waiting, and I was making sure, like, the oxygen was attached to his face. But yeah, definitely had that. That was really intense. I've sailed through a storm that was so, so strong and so, like, thick. Like, the rain was so fast, the, like, water was coming up. I was standing in the stern of the boat, and I could not see the front of the boat because it was, like, so, so stormy. That was really intense. Done that.
I imagine. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Sailing is great. Sailing is so much fun. Yeah. I've done a lot of night sailing. Night sailing is very weird because you are genuinely using the stars a lot to navigate, which is really fun. What else have I done? Oh, when I was sailing, when I was, like, in the Caribbean for a couple months, I would get so attuned to the weather that, and I slept out on deck, like, because there was not really a lot of room, and sleeping on deck was more comfortable anyway. So I slept on deck in a hammock, and I was so attuned to the weather that I would wake up and I was like, it's gonna rain in 5 minutes. And I would just, like, pack up all my things, like, tell everyone, like, it's gonna rain, like, get in the boat. And sure enough, every single time it started raining, and I was like, yes, don't question me when I tell you to get off the deck. Like, trust me. But yeah, lots of sailing stories, I think, is where, like, all my weird stories come from.
What would be the weirdest thing you ever saw out there, maybe in the ocean or even in the sky as you were sailing out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the weirdest thing is, like, kind of an evening sail where we're sailing towards this island called Anegada Island. And I look behind me, and it is, again, the biggest tiger shark I have ever seen in my life following us. And I'm just like, nope. Just like, I, like, looked at it, and I was like, I cannot think about this creature. This, like, I can't think about it. And I immediately,
do you,
like,
remember how big it was?
I don't, like, I could not tell you how big it was. All I know is that, like, I saw it and my mind immediately went, like, nope. My mind was just like, you cannot think about this. It was huge. And I'm sure that it's, like, not as big as my memory, but it just felt so massive.
Yeah. Well, so but it's great that in the imagination it's greater because it inspiration, right? It's a better story. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything in the sky? Have you ever seen a UFO or anything?
There was this one really weird light that I saw when I was a kid, and it was I think it was in high school. It was me and a friend. We both saw it. We were just, like, hanging out outside. This light, like, shot up into the sky, paused, went down, paused again, and then shot off in, like, another direction. And we watched it and we're like, what is that? What just happened? And we both saw it. So we both knew that, like, we weren't going crazy, but, like, it was very, very weird. That was very weird.
Yeah. And do you believe in UFOs or UFOs obviously exist, or, but I mean,
in aliens?
I mean, UFOs exist, and they might not be aliens, but they are, you know, unidentified flying objects. But I mean,
something's out there for sure. I don't know if it's ever come to Earth, but something is out there. Like, we can't be the only planet with life. That's ridiculous. That's absurd.
Yeah.
Something's out there somewhere.
And would you imagine they would be friendly or hostile if you...
God, I don't know. It's hard for me to think about that. No.
Do you believe in those stories you hear there? And that people are abducted or stuff? Or, like...
Maybe. I think if there are aliens out there, they are pretty disinterested in us.
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
Yeah. I have the theory that they see us fighting each other so much that we, if we can't understand each other, they would say they would never understand us. So just stay away from these people.
Yeah,
they're not friendly. Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah. I mean, other thing I ask here, and it's totally fine, it's known answer, is like, have you ever had any experience with altered state of awareness, either with, you know, deep meditation or, you know, psychedelics? And if you did, what was it for you? And have it, you know, change anything for you?
So, not with psychedelics. For a couple years, I was at the marketing department for this retreat center that focused on like Buddhist meditation and Buddhist retreats. So I did a lot of, like spiritual work with them, with like a lot of meditation, a lot of like attending these lectures about what it takes to be a good Buddhist. Which I always approached very academically as much as I could, because while I'm not, again, it's very spiritual, I definitely like respect the spirituality of others, and working at this retreat center, it's kind of important that you learn about that sort of spirituality. So took a very academic approach to it. There was this one, I did go to like this one meditation, guided meditation that was really, really fascinating, because there was a point where I felt like years had passed. Like, because this guy was doing like this guided meditation, and he was an academic as well. He was very much like someone who studied the effects of meditation and did like, was a neuroscientist and like really interested in that kind of aspect of meditation and Buddhist applications. So I think that might have been also why I really connected with that kind of like meditation style that he used. So we went on this guided meditation, and there was this like one moment, like for only like a few seconds, but I genuinely felt like I've been here for years. It was bonkers. It was really, really wild. Yeah. So
that's great. Yeah.
So yeah, there was that one time that was really fascinating. But yeah, I don't do a lot of psychedelics, and I don't do a lot of meditation in my life otherwise. But there was that like one moment. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I think.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I started doing a bit of this, watching. There was this Netflix series called Headspace Guide to Meditation. Mm-hmm. And the guy that presents is like a Buddhist monk. But he's also an academic and talks about all the studies and effects and this stuff. It's very kind of convincing of the rationality of the good behind it.
Yes.
That's how I kind of started. And even, you know, I'm atheist, but I do meditation. It kind of helps a lot with my anxiety. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's very good. Is there anything else weird that you might believe in? Have you ever had? Do you believe in ghosts, for example? Have you already had any experience with ghosts of any kind?
Or
stories?
Sort of. I'm gonna like pass on that question.
Okay. And are you a person that dreams a lot? Do you remember your dreams?
Not often. I definitely, before I go to bed, I'm often thinking of like the stories that I'm writing. So often my dreams will take on the shape of those stories in interesting ways, which is like cool. But generally I don't remember much about them.
Yeah. Do you ever remember something from the dreams that you incorporated in your stories, since you're dreaming about them, or no?
I can't recall anything specific, but I do know that like I've thought about my story, like had a dream that was like vaguely shaped by the story that I was writing. And then when I go on like a long hike the next day, I'm like, oh, I think this is what I was trying to like think about. And it like helps with that generation, that like cleaning out process. So maybe, I don't think that I can point to anything and be like, this was from a dream, but definitely like the idea of using those kind of moments to sort of process, I think, helps out a lot for me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we are getting into a more like whimsical fun questions, you know, about maybe something that you like or personality. And the first thing would be, if you could live in any fictional world or universe, where would you choose to live, and who would you be in that place? And that can be, you know, from games, from movies, comics, literature, or anything like this.
Gosh, I've never thought very hard about this. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to live in a comic book world because stuff could get changed so easily. But yeah, I probably like some kind of fantasy world. I'm not quite sure which one, but I think I would like to be in a fantasy world. That'd be fun. Maybe a pirate world, a world where, wait, I have it. Treasure Planet. I want to live in Treasure Planet universe.
Wow. And yeah. Who would you like to be there?
Oh, I'd be Jim Hawkins. Who? Of course. I would be Jim Hawkins. I would not go to the Cop Academy at the end of the movie, but I would be Jim Hawkins. I would be a pirate for sure. Jim Hawkins if he ended up as a pirate.
Awesome. And now the other way around, if you could take anything from a fictional world or universe and make that thing real in our world, what would you pick and why? And that thing can be, you know, an object, a place, an entity, a faction, any, you know, element from these places.
God, I'm so typical. I'm going to choose the sailboat. I would want to bring, there's this one sailboat. There's so many boats. There's so many good boats in literature. I don't know if you know this, Tioga. Like, there's so many good ones. There's the Dawn Treader. There's Arendelle. There is the Flying Dutchman. There's so many good boats. But there's this one boat in Stardust, the one that Robert De Niro flies like through the air, and it's like a lightning pirate boat. I'd want that boat. I'd bring that.
Okay.
In.
Yeah. That's very, very, very useful too.
I think so. I would have a good time with it personally.
Yeah. And if you could have a superpower, what superpower would you like to have? And what would be the first thing we'd do with that, with the superpower?
I think that I'm pretty basic, and I think I would like the power of flight. Yeah. I think that's it. I would just fly around. I don't think that I would have any specific destination. I would just be like, I just want to like go for a little trip. See ya. I think I'm pretty basic. I'd say flight. Also, if I can only fly, but I'm not like super powerful, or I don't have like laser eyes or anything, no one can expect me to do anything, which I think is really important.
Yeah. Well, let's people want you to deliver stuff to other, you know, go take this very important thing elsewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, they could, but
yeah,
I don't know. Be like, I just fly around. I don't know what you think I'm capable of.
Yeah.
It's not this.
Yeah. And I mean, finally, do you remember, you know, the last time you felt really happy, you know, just grateful for being here and being alive and everything? And if you do, would you care sharing when was it and what were you doing? Or
let me think. I think like I met up with a bunch of friends on Sunday, and it was really nice. That's it. I met up with a bunch of friends for coffee. It was like five of us, and we took over like two tables, and there were not enough chairs. But yeah, just meeting up with my friends for coffee was really, really fun. Really nice. Yeah. Felt very, very happy.
That's amazing. Do you have any kind of, you know, do you have a practice of noticing these moments? Of gratitude, or
I maybe not consciously, but I think that it's part of my practice when it comes to like community building, is to find the moments of joy and really make sure that you can replicate them and understand them. And for me, hanging out with my friends is one of those things where I always try to remember what those moments feel like and what we were doing and how we got there and stuff like that.
That's great. Amazing. I mean, those were all my questions, and so great for having you here. Do you want to tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work? I'll put all the shows, all the link in the show notes, you know, for Rascal, for any other work you want to promote to.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if anyone wants to support me and support my co-bosses, Chase Carter and Rowan Zoli, please subscribe to Rascal. That's the only thing I got. All I got is That's Rascal. Awesome. That's it.
Yeah. Go there, subscribe to Rascal. And then, do you have any last words for the wonderful weirdos that are still listening to us?
I think that it takes bravery to call yourself a weirdo. And I think that it's always a fun time.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And can you take us out saying the catchphrase of the show? Keep it weird, everybody.
Keep it weird, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Weird Games and Weirder People. If you'd like to keep up with the show, please subscribe to be notified when we release new episodes. If you'd like to support us, please leave a review or head on to ko-fi.com/WGNWP. See you next time, and remember, weird is the new wonderful.